irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and my co-host is former NFL linebacker, charter school founder, and ordained minister, Marvin Smith. And Marvin will be with us shortly. In the meantime, I think for most of you that listen to the show, you know that I read a lot of books, and I try to read about one a week. And I got to tell you that once in a great while, a novel is written that dives deeply into a real and present danger to children. Now, be it from the poorest to the richest countries. Now, such is the case with Patrick Brigham's new book, Abduction: An Angel Over Rimini, which concerns itself with child abduction and human trafficking, revolving around the abduction investigation of a little British girl from a campsite in Rimini, Italy. So now, to talk more about this, Patrick has joined us, and he's going to talk a little bit about writing and researching this book. Now, Patrick is a working novelist and journalist, and in 1993, Patrick left his home in London and moved to Sofia, Bulgaria, where he set up the first English-language news magazine in the Balkans called the Sofia Western News. As a journalist, he has witnessed the dramatic political, economical, and social changes in this once hardcore communist country. And I look forward to talking to him a little bit about that as well, because I've been to Bulgaria and I've worked cases in Bulgaria, and he's right on target. There's been a lot of changes. Now, Patrick's popular mystery novels, they feature a fictional police detective, Chief Inspector Michael Lambert. And although his books are fiction-based, Patrick conducted a tremendous amount of research and analysis in order to accurately portray the process of how abduction and human trafficking cases are handled and solved. A master of storytelling, Patrick brings these hard facts, realism, and a great deal of awareness to the important underlying themes in each of his books. Patrick, welcome to Answers for the Family. Patrick, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you very much for having me.
I really appreciate you joining us, and I know you're joining us from your home in Greece. You know, one of the first things I want to say is that, you know, as I was going through the book, that's one of the things that I realized was that you must have done an incredible amount of research, because there is so much realism that you have brought into this. And being somebody who has gone out in the field, who has broken up human trafficking rings, it was really nice to read a book where somebody is very accurate in the way in which these cases are worked and the way in which they're solved.
Well, I think it's very nice to have a reader like you who has got the knowledge and understands how it really does happen, because so often in fiction, people or writers tend to skirt around the realities of it all and either make it up or they imagine that it's going to upset somebody. But this is a subject which should upset people, really, because I think that anything to do with children, it's our responsibility to care for them. And because they simply can't care for themselves.
Well, absolutely. And why, again, as I had mentioned, you know, you've written many other books. Why, in this case, did you choose the topic of abduction and human trafficking?
Well, in the past, I've picked similar subjects which make you think, basically. If you do write, it's very encouraging to have a subject which keeps you riveted. I actually write these books in 6 months. Many writers will take anything up to 2 years, but these are subjects which I find very interesting. And right on my doorstep here, I've had plenty of encouragement, because the border with Turkey and Greece is the river Evros. Mm-hmm. And in the last, let's say, 12 years or so, perhaps a bit longer, literally thousands of people have crossed the river Evros from troubled states in the Middle East, and as far afield as India, as in Bangladesh and Pakistan, and they've illegally crossed the river and made their way into Western Europe. And in many cases, because they're English speaking, mm-hmm. they're actually on their way to England.
So, and now, so you say they're on their way to England. Now, how is it that they are sucked into the world of human trafficking?
Well, first of all, they're sold a rather good story. I mean, very often the promises that traffickers make are that these poor unfortunates are going to some form of El Dorado, some fantastic welfare state that's going to make their lives absolutely rosy. You know, the money passes hand, the criminals do very well out of it. But the reality is that when they arrive in Greece, it's nothing like the way it's been presented. They have by then become victims, mm-hmm. stateless victims, because in a lot of cases their passports have been taken off them, I'd say in most cases. And literally they're wandering around with no papers and no idea where they're supposed to be going or what they're going to do.
Now, I'm glad that you brought up the point about their papers being taken from them. I think that's an important point because, again, being someone who has been involved in this as well, I would get questions oftentimes, sometimes from law enforcement, you know, that would say, you know, I think you're exaggerating. You know, I don't think it's, you know, that's the situation going on. Like if, as an investigator, if I'm looking for a runaway and I point out that I believe that they're being trafficked out of a particular location, and they go, you know, if that was the case, why don't they just run up to us when they see us? You know, if they're going out to the corner, why don't they run up to us and say, hey, you know what? I'm being kidnapped. I'm being held against my will. I'm being made to do things. And what they don't realize is as you say, they've come from another country. They've had their passport taken away from them. And they, in many cases, have come from a country where the traffickers are involved with the police. So they don't know that if they go to the police that they're not going to go to that one that's maybe connected to the traffickers, because that's what they dealt with in their own country. And so that's some of the education and why I'm happy to have you on here, the education that I think that the people need to have, that our law enforcement needs to have, so that they understand that they are still truly victims.
Yes, I think that you are talking about your average Western policeman who really lives in a completely different world. The police here in Greece, most of them these days are called Frontex, mm-hmm. which means they come from various different EU countries. And literally they're there to police these illegal immigrants, to either stop them if they can, or if they can't, to make sure that they're properly treated. The thing is, Greece is a very poor country, and I'm sure that you've read recently about the financial problems that Greece has been experiencing.
Yes, I have.
And in the north here, where I live, next to the Evros River, it's a farming area, and they're mainly subsistence farmers, so they're not very well off. And neither, I presume, are a number of the policemen or the customs agents either side of the river. That's the Turkish side and the Greek side. And so, of course, they're open to all sorts of inducements.
Well, yeah, and I think that's another good point to bring up is that, you know, when you have that level of poverty, it makes it much easier for people to be promised just about anything and think that that just might be the answer, be it somebody who's very poor, who's told by the traffickers that their children are going to be trained in a job in the big city. You know, there's so many different things that they can be told, And, you know, if you're very poor and you have 10 children, you know, allowing two of them to go to the big city because you believe that they're going to have this, in, you know, incredible training that's going to allow them to work, you know, I think we can see how that could be enticing.
Yes. I mean, these traffickers are actually called criminals. That's their title. And so they don't tell the truth very often. I don't think that they're likely to, be some kind of misplaced Mother Teresa. And so the whole thing is all based on lies.
Exactly.
And smoke and mirrors.
Exactly.
Whatever they promise in Bangladesh or in Syria or Egypt or even in Iran and Iraq is one thing, but the reality is quite different. And I think one of the great problems is that we're talking about fairly gullible people from the Middle East and Asian countries, but they're not poor. And the reason I say that is because traffickers expect quite a lot of money in order to do what is required of them. Turkey doesn't help very much because it lets all these people through. And, of course, an awful lot of the traffickers themselves are Turkish. And to understand what it is here, we're living in a kind of crucible of ex-East European communist countries, all of which are very poor.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Greece itself, which is pretty, pretty poor, certainly in the north here. I mean, you don't see too many shiny cars here. And so to understand how it works is that it's really a great continuation from the very beginning in Bangladesh right the way through. It's all about poor people who are very vulnerable to corruption, including the officials and the traffickers and even their cohorts, who people who drive cars and deliver their victims, if you like.
Well, you know, we have a listener question that is coming in. And again, I want to thank all of those listeners. For those that either send in an email, they send in instant messages, or if you call in again, I ask that you don't, you know, you don't block your number. But this message says, you read about abductions and never think it will happen to anyone close to you. My friend's 16-year-old daughter was taken by an unknown man while jogging in a local park 2 years ago. The family never gave up looking for her, spending many thousands of dollars on investigators. 3 months ago, her picture was recognized by a person in St. Louis, Missouri, 1,000 miles away from her home. The police and family arrived at the house she was living, and she refused to speak to her family. Now 18, the police said their hands are tied. To say that they are devastated is an understatement. It is apparent that she is on drugs and may be working as a prostitute. They tried to do several interventions unsuccessfully. In your opinion, is this a common reaction by the young woman who was taken, that they choose the life that they have been now placed in and will not return home, even given the chance?
Well, it's a kind of Stockholm syndrome, isn't it? Once
yes.
they've been connected to the abductors for any length of time, they're going to quite naturally think that their life is fairly normal. They're going to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
To expect them to be permanently looking for an escape route is not very likely, and I think that the abductors realize that too. And if the chain which they're held by is called drugs, then, of course, that works just as well as any other means.
Yeah, and I think I can add to that. And there's a story that I have in regards to a case that I was dealing with. And it was a 15-year-old runaway who was taken, and she was being used in a house of prostitution. And what we did was we went in to that place, and I chose her, and I asked to bring her out. They call that a bar fine. So I offered to pay whatever the bar fine was, which means you don't want to be with them in that particular location. You want to take them back to your hotel. Well, you pay the bar fine because they send what they call a stringer with you. They send somebody who keeps an eye on you and her so that you don't take her. Once we got back to the room and we got inside where I had a female agent, the we told the girl, we're here to rescue you, and we show them a picture and a video of their family, of her family, saying, this is your family. They've hired us to find you, so now you get to go with us. Well, she started crying, and she showed a picture herself. She pulled a picture out of her pocket and showed it to us, and it was a picture of one of her sisters in the crosshairs of a rifle scope.
Oh.
It was horrible as she was crying, and she said, "I can't go with you. If I go with you, they will kill my sister." Now there is a happy ending to that part of the story, is because we did take her back to that location, but we then got what's called a T visa, a transport visa, immediate one. We moved the family to another location, did another picture and another video of the family saying, we've been moved. There's no reason to worry about us. Nobody's going to harm us. Please go with these people. This time, when we did the same thing, she went with us, and we had law enforcement arrest the stringer and then go in and raid the place so that they could make more arrests. So, yes, you're absolutely right. There are so many things that go on out there. Now, I want to share with everybody that Marvin has joined us. He is here now. And Marvin, we're talking with Patrick right now. We appreciate you here.
Oh, well, thank you. And as I'm listening, I'm tuned in. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of fear involved. I mean, when you look at this whole thing of abduction, trafficking, it's like fear seems to be at the core of how you keep individuals enslaved, whether it's, perceived fear or real fear. But that is an issue, and I think as you're addressing, alleviating that made a big difference.
Right, and so Patrick, as you were doing your research, now did you get close enough to this to where you felt that there was put you in a position of fear?
No, because I've lived in this part of the world for a very long time, and I think that there, in some cases, people are probably more frightened of me than them, because I have a hard nose. But what I'd like to say is that so these traffickers, they think they're businessmen. They've become so perverted that they believe that what they do is a legitimate business. They could be selling, I don't know, what should we say, ice cream or, tins of fruit. It's irrelevant to them because they're in it for the money. Mm-hmm. Now, I've come across these Turkish traffickers. I don't know. I think probably you wouldn't feel bad if you sort of took out your pistol and put an end to them. They're pretty awful. But actually, you see, they're all the same. Not far from where I live, there's a town in Bulgaria called Svilengrad, and it's full of casinos. Oh. And that's where these guys go. They go and spend their money there. And guess what they're surrounded by? They're surrounded by ladies from different parts of the ex-Eastern Europe, from Azerbaijan, from Russia. They're everywhere. They've sort of spread all over this part of the world. So we're talking about people who, although they are criminals, they think that what they're doing is all right, and they regard any human being as an opportunity to make some money, whether it involves blackmail or violence, even selling body parts. I've heard stories about places in like Kosovo, where in fact certain individuals have gone to have kidneys removed, and I dare say that a lot more than that if they didn't play their cards right. It's a rather depressing thought, but at that point, you see, the world is full of people, old and decrepit, rather like myself, who occasionally need a bit of a spare part. And I do believe that's one of the ways you get it.
Wow. So, Patrick, this is Marvin. And, you know, as I'm listening to you, and what I hear is that these individuals, they have no regards, no moral regards for the human body, for the human being. The human being, the person is just an object. It's just like you said, it's they're no more than if I'm in business and I'm selling chicken or I'm selling soap, or it's just another commodity.
That's it. You're absolutely right. And but they don't think they're doing any wrong. And that's because they're criminals.
Yes.
And we lose sight of the fact that we imagine somehow that these characters are really sort of a bit like us. Well, they're not. I'm reminded of a little story about a friend of mine who was a deputy prison governor. And he used to talk to a man called Nielsen, who was a serial killer. And he said he was absolutely charming. We'd talk about sports, soccer, cars, this and that, and over a period of years. And then one day, he said to this friend of mine, he said, "What do you do on a Saturday?" And he said, "Oh, well, I dig the garden, and I might go for a beer." He said, "Well, why don't you go out and kill prostitutes?" He said, "It's great."
Wow.
Can you see how the mind can be corrupted?
Yeah, it's just amazing that, you know, they can talk about it so calmly, you know, in the same breath as, you know, as cutting the lawn, you know.
Yes.
It's just really sad.
I hope you don't mind, Patrick, but I don't know what Alan shared a little earlier, but one thing I can say is I known Alan for over 30 years, and I know he has been someone that's been on the ground when it comes to human trafficking, abductions, and now listening to what I've read about yourself and what I'm hearing, I'm in awe because I'm to be able to hear this subject firsthand, you know, first person versus, you know, third person, fourth person. So it's exciting to me, and I've been close because of Alan. So what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, Patrick, I have some questions, and I'd like to maybe tie Alan into these questions because I think we can get a couple perspectives here, one kind of on that ground and then your experience. I think it would be a great topic for the show. Well, I have a question. I've seen a lot of different statistics about the scope of human trafficking. Why don't we have consistent numbers and more media coverage? And Patrick, what can you share? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a good question because it's something which I've researched. You know, it's not something which you'll read in my book because actually I don't think people are sort of quite into it as deep as that. But the point is that it's one of those subjects that nobody really wants to talk about. Today, I think we're discovering that we have far more in common across the pond, as we say, in your country and Europe, than we might have imagined before. But if you're looking at your average newspaper, abduction is not on the menu until a few years ago, a little English girl was abducted from Portugal. And the police there decided that it was one of the famous 85% stories, meaning that it was obviously emanated from the parents themselves or some close friends, and that she'd been not abducted at all, but murdered and buried somewhere. And the individual in question, the policeman in question, stuck to this story. I don't know why, because there just wasn't enough evidence to support it. But that's what he did. And, of course, the whole thing was swept under the carpet and forgotten when the police ran out of resources. Until not so long ago, the British government became so incensed by the whole thing that they started pouring a few million pounds into it. And now, of course, they've discovered that she hasn't been murdered and buried, and because they've dug up everywhere that could be dug up, and they've radared everything that could be radared, and she just isn't there. So she has been abducted. Isn't it strange that some of the old ideas are actually causing some of our problems. People who've got these set ideas about what should happen, not what did happen.
Did happen, right, right. That's so true. And I, Alan, I mean, could we get your perspective? Because I know I've listened to you over the years, and it's on cases. I know you've been all over the world on some very high-profile cases. And so what are your thoughts on this?
Well, and I think Patrick's right on target. You know, this is something that's been going on for many, many years. But it's only more recently been brought out into the limelight, so to speak. I know that over 30 years ago in locating runaways, I had come across some that was obviously had been sucked into human trafficking. And law enforcement would just blow it off and go, you know, they probably just ran away. You know, it's not, well, yes, they did run away, but now they have been taken by these people and this is what they're being used for. And again, people will go back and say, oh, you know, that goes on in third world countries. That really doesn't go on in westernized countries. And as Patrick is saying, it absolutely goes on. Now, one of the ugly truths when people say, you know, bring this up is that most of the time as Westerners, we're buyers rather than sellers.
Mm.
You know, so, you know, it still goes on. It's still out there. I'm very thankful that now so many governments have gotten behind this. They're doing a lot more than they ever did in the past. And we just have to keep pressure on them. We have to keep telling them that this is going on. And I know it from a statistical standpoint, you know, as Patrick was saying, he doesn't want to spend too much time on that. But, you know, various estimates are out there. But it's, you know, one of the ones that I think a lot of us tend to go with is there's approximately 29 million people in this world that are enslaved at this time.
Wow.
I mean, it's huge. It literally, it causes the hair to stand up on the back of my neck that there can be 29 million people out there that are enslaved by someone else.
Well, you know, I look at, too, technology is, if I look at modern day and the use of technology, it's like a double-edged sword. On one hand, it could be very useful. On the other hand, it could be something that doesn't help us to the greatest need. But on the good side, I think what technology has done is made the world a closer place. And so if we are looking at different continents and communication with the police or investigation, now we're able to communicate on real time, the use of technology. Hopefully that's helping put a dent in the war, but, you know, we still got a long ways to go.
Right. And Patrick, did you have certain people that were your, you know, that confided in you, either the bad guys, or you had certain people that were sort of technical advisors, if we were going to use theatrical terms, you know, that helped you to get close enough to this, to get the information you got? Because again, as I said in the beginning, I felt your book on this subject, you know, was very accurate.
I think one of the things which have changed illegal immigration, of course, is technology.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And I think that one of the things that has helped the world to understand there is a problem is called Mr. Google. You know, he has been very useful. But the point is that a lot of it is called observation. It's a very old-fashioned way of finding out things. And during my time here, I've made it my business to, you know, to keep my eyes open and to talk to people. And who better than to talk to the local authorities here who are actually dealing with it? But you see, they've been trying very hard to cover it up. They don't want to be known as the back door into Europe for all the illegal immigrants. And of course, you only have to sort of think of what Greece is. Greece has been an EU state since 1984. Okay, so suddenly there's a war in Bosnia. Mm-hmm. Where are all those displaced people going? Oh, well, they came to Greece. And then, of course, we mustn't forget about Afghanistan and Iraq and all the other little skirmishes which are going on. And so from being the Christian bastion, let's say, of Europe, it became a soft entrance point. They didn't want to, the Greek authorities didn't really want to take all the blame, because it really wasn't very fair. Therefore, finally, Brussels did stump up some cash, and a lot of Frontex policemen turned up from different countries. Nowhere near enough. Absolutely, you know, shutting the door after the horse has bolted, more or less. But the fact is that this is how they've been perceived. Now, what I'm trying to do, and actually what they're doing as well, is owning up and saying, no, we can't afford to do this. No, it's too much. It's not just a matter of people coming into a country. It's also a matter of feeding them when they're there, right, and housing them. Mm-hmm. And the local... I won't call it a prison, but it certainly looks like one, is absolutely busting with Asians, all of whom are going crazy because they've got nothing to do. Wow. And, of course, unable to see very much of the future.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, our guest is Patrick Brigham. The book is Abduction, An Angel Over Rimini. We're going to take a break. We will be right back, so stay with us here on Answers for the Family. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. All right, and we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. The subject matter is one that is all near and dear to our heart, and that is human trafficking. Our guest is Patrick Brigham. His new book is Abduction, An Angel Over Rimini.
You know, Patrick, one thing I realized that I think the first step in any change in society or in societal in a direction is when we start to take responsibility and own up to something. Because one thing I realized, and I don't care what crunch you're in, as long as we don't face reality, then things continue to happen. And that's when the dark underbelly continues to swell. So my question for you then, Patrick, would be, what happens to the traffickers when he or she is captured and a victim is rescued?
Well, fortunately, in my book, some of them do get captured. Which made me very happy writing it, because I don't know that they always do. I don't think the prisons of Greece have got so much capacity that they can take every trafficker that they can get their hands on. But at the same time, they have had their successes. They've also caught a few Al-Qaeda operatives, because obviously if you have a well-known trafficking source, you can use it for anything you like. You know, earlier on I was saying that it's a kind of business, and that they have no moral decency at all. As long as they get paid, they're quite happy. And of course, one assumes that they're rather well paid by these people. Wow. One of the great fears of Europe is that there are going to be a lot of these operatives causing problems in the future. And it occurred to me that they should really have a little bit more of an eye on this particular problem, but I don't know that they do. I think they do slip through, and it's very easy for them to slip through with all these other unfortunates, because they come from the same countries, they look the same, and they speak the same language.
Now, now Alan, go ahead. I mean, let's come back to you, Alan. I mean, now, from your years of involvement and cases you've been involved with, do you have any information of being captured and results and things of that nature?
Well, and fortunately, we do have some very nice success stories. But one of the thoughts that was coming to mind as Patrick was talking about that was, you know, the mind of these traffickers. You know, what is it that is going through their mind? And one of the thoughts that comes to mind each time I think of that is my partner who was undercover. And as he was undercover gaining information to break up a human trafficking ring, he's talking to one of the other traffickers, and I'm hearing this because he's wired. So I'm in a van and I'm listening, so I'm not getting it, you know, I'm not looking in the guy's eyes like Logan is. But Logan says to him, so, you know, how did you get in this business, you know, so to speak?
Right.
And the guy says, well, he goes, you know, I used to traffic cocaine. He says, you know, so he says, I used to move cocaine, and he mentioned the different countries he took it from and so on and so forth. So Logan says, why the change? And Logan says the guy's eyes were the most eerie looking eyes he'd ever looked in when the guy said to him, he said, when I realized that I can sell a gram of cocaine once, but I can sell a woman over and over again.
Wow. Whoa.
And he said when he heard that, and again, me listening to this from a van, you know, again, the hair on the back of my neck, it was just one of the most eerie things. But it really told us the mindset of these people that are doing this. Again, it's just another commodity.
Wow. I've tried to get some basic statistics for you. There are 500 million people living in the EU or thereabouts, and about 2,500 a year of these abducted people or runaways or whatever section they come in are actually abducted by criminals. It's a one percenter. There's 250,000 children reported missing each year in the EU, and 1% of those are abducted by criminals. So it might not seem an awful lot. You know, I mean, I'm sounding a bit like Stalin. You know, one is unfortunate, 2,500 is a statistic, but it's not intended that way. That's quite a lot of children.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's quite a lot of police work as well. You imagine having to find those children. And I think it's about resources. So one of the first things I would suggest that policemen get paid properly so they're not inclined to be diverted.
Yes.
Right. And I think it's very, very important that they have more specialist people who actually take the whole thing seriously, and they're not just all-round policemen, because I think it's a little bit more sophisticated than that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And one of the things that, again, I'm very thankful for here in the United States is that we now have specialized task forces, many of which have been trained by one of the experts in this field, which is Dottie Laster. I'm proud to say that I know her and that she's on our board of our nonprofit that helps locate and rescue these people who have been enslaved. So, yes, you're right. They need to be paid better, and they need to be trained better. There's things that you can see that you can look out for to know the difference between someone who is being held against their will and someone who is choosing to be in that situation. Again, you know, we have, you know, people that look at prostitution and say, oh, well, they're just choosing to do that. No, not necessarily. Yes, there may be some that choose that, but in many cases, these are people who have not chosen this life. They have no choice in it.
You know, on the other side of this, I think about, you know, Patrick, when we talk about 1%, it's not a lot. But then if we put that in perspective, if I'm going to have major heart surgery and my doctor has a 99% success rate, I would think I'd rather prefer to have the doctor with 100% success rate, because that 1% could kill me. You know, so same thing with an airplane. Do you want to fly an airplane that, you know, has 100% success rate or 99%? It goes back to the same thing. You're right, Patrick. Resources, training, corruption. It's a bit much, but I really believe in today's society, we can address the issues collectively if we come together, if we start to really make it a priority.
Well, I've been reading recently about a Mr. John Walsh. In fact, I quote something he said in the beginning of my book because it's very relevant. It appears that the NCMEC, or the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, founded in 1984, is really one of the very first organizations to take it seriously. Mm-hmm. I think we're a little bit out of date in Europe, to be perfectly honest. And I think it's time for the specialist police forces to get together. Now, in Europe, we have Europol. Forget Interpol. I think that's become a little bit corrupt. But Europol is a new police force. And they've been having an awful lot of success, together with the American FBI, in breaking up some of these rings, because they are international. You know, it isn't just the internet which joins the whole world together. There's an awful lot of aeroplanes flying around as well. And I think that it's important that countries get together and they you know, coalesce a lot more.
That's good. Well, I think on that note, Patrick, I have a question, a listener's question, and it kind of ties into this, where we're at this point. The listener, the question is, I am very much looking forward to reading your book, as I am from Greece and lived a short while in Istanbul during the 80s. I was reading that Turkey's human trafficking number has been cut dramatically because the government got very touched on these criminal issues or enterprises. In another article, it states that Cyprus was now the new hub for these activities. Is that true?
Well, there's two Cyprus. There's Turkish Cyprus, and there's, of course, a Greek Cyprus. So, in fact, it's a kind of minuscule version, isn't it, of the same problem. It's just... all right, I mean, I don't have any specific information about that. But one thing I will say is that the Turks have been casting a very, very blind eye to the whole situation. But you see, once you get into Germany and Hamburg, where once upon a time they were enemies, the Turks and the Greeks, they sort of get together. And so some of these smuggling groups are a mixture which you cannot believe. There are Greek Turks, there are German Turks, there are Greek Germans, there are Bulgarians, there are Bulgarian Turks. There's a complete sort of potpourri of nations, which are all basically the same now because of the EU. They're now all a part of the same group, and they get together. And of course, once you have a common language, i.e. Turkish, a Turkish Bulgarian or a Greek Turk or a Turkish Turk are perfectly happy talking to one another. And I think that's the trouble. I can see more similarities than differences between your problems in America and ours here. I think that, you know, if you wanted to spend a couple of weeks on the border with Mexico, you know, I'm sure there are lots of stories which will, you know, make your hair stand on end. Yes. But at the same time, it's the overall issue. And one of the things that Chief Inspector Lambert says is, I know it's awful, and I know these terrible things have happened, and an awful lot of people are being killed. But once you find one little girl, then justice has been done.
Yes. Well, you know, Patrick, in your book you talk about, as you're sharing now, illegal immigration. How are traffickers moving these children to other countries?
Well, they don't use airports because the security is too good. In my book, they use caravans and camper vans because there are plenty of hidey holes, and also because once you get on a ferry going across the Adriatic, or once you go across a border into, let's say, from Romania into Hungary, these border posts now don't really operate because of the Schengen Agreement.
Okay.
So you can actually drive more or less all the way through Europe, and the only place you get any trouble at all is called the United Kingdom, where they're getting rather angry because actually they are the target area. You know,
right. I mean,
I'm sure you've been to London,
yes,
and I'm sure you've enjoyed a nice curry somewhere. Well,
yes.
It did come from somewhere.
yes. It goes to show that the world is. You know, when I was a kid, we used to talk about how distant the world is, and you know, and now we're closer together now than we've ever been in history, and it's something like a melting pot globally. I mean, it's really interesting. Hey, and if I don't have curry, I can make it. I can go online now and get the recipe. Jeez, it may not taste as good, but at least the option is there. You know,
you're making me feel hungry.
Hey, you
in
brought it up,
book,
Patrick.
Abduction. Yes. Our friend, the policeman, is a bit of a gourmet, and he keeps going to restaurants and eating things. And one of the people I know who has done a write-up of the book said that he was on holiday when he read it, and he kept on reading about food, and he kept on getting hungry. He couldn't, he couldn't find anything to eat that was worth bothering with. He said it was awful.
Well, we are down to the last minutes of the show, Patrick, and what I'd like to do is have Alan, maybe if there's anything that you would like to touch base on before we close out, I'd like to point a question back to you, and or open-ended, what are your thoughts and maybe closing?
Well, I think in closing, I just, one of the main messages I wanted us to get out is that, here is an opportunity to read about something that's really very ugly. I mean, it's something very ugly, but it's also very real, and it's happening in our country. Now, for those, if you compare it to movies, there are people that will not watch a documentary. To them, a documentary is boring. Now, that's not me either. It's many that I enjoy. But on the other hand, if you have a movie that is about a subject and it follows a very realistic pattern about what it is, you reach many more people. And that's what I see with Patrick's book, is we're going to be able to reach many more people to learn about this because he does it in a great storytelling fashion. So that, again, thank you, Patrick, for doing that, because it helps get the message out to people that may not necessarily understand. They can read the book. They can be educated, and at the same time, they can do it in the same manner that you might watch a really great movie, a drama. Although it's a very heavy, heavy subject, there's a drama there that keeps your attention, that keeps you interested. And at the same time, hopefully you come away realizing that, maybe there's something that we can all do to help.
I have a thought. Alan,
yeah.
I know how you are involved in the whole thing about movies and taking documentaries and making them featured movies with the twist. Well, people, this is the 21st century and people want to be entertained. And so if it's dry subject, it's going to make me cry. I don't want to watch. But if it's in a movie, something that all of a sudden depicted as just is fiction, nonfiction, and it's just played in a movie, then, it might be, you're okay. That movie guy on the other hand here, so.
Well, Patrick, I think what he's getting to, and the question would be, has anybody optioned your book?
No, not yet, but I think what I've forgotten to tell you is that there is a sort of a side story that runs through this book.
Share
and
with
while
them.
All these things are revealing themselves, policeman who, like most policemen, is suffering from ghastly divorces and stuff, don't they all? But luckily he doesn't drink too much. he actually falls in love with a German countess, and his life changes, and so there's a romantic theme as well. And he also, unfortunately, for his German countess, has an encounter with a very, very beautiful Greek policewoman called Electra Boulas, which sort of is a kind of punctuation to the end of the case when he's almost wrapped it up. So there's a little bit more to it than just all the horrors of abduction and trafficking. There's a lovely story behind it as well. That's for the ladies.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And yes, I was aware of that, but I was also didn't want to share too much because I didn't want to all of a sudden have you go, wait a minute, you're giving away too much. So Patrick, thank you so much. I wish we had more time. Please stay in touch. Let us know when you're coming out with your next one. For everybody out there, again, if you want to get more information on the book, I would imagine that it can be gotten at all of the major outlets.
But absolutely.
But you can also go to Patrick's website at www.patrickbrigham.co.uk. If you're driving and you can't write that down, go to our website, Answers, the numeral for the family. Go to our blog, and we will have all of Patrick's information there, as well as the information on his book. Patrick, thank you so much. And for everybody out there, be with us next week, and be good human beings.
And Patrick,
thank you very much.
And Patrick, when you're in the U.S., definitely look us up so we can go have a meal.
All the best. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye now.
Ciao.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.